It's time for Two Blokes Talking Tech.
There is a lot going on in technology, as always.
With all the latest news and information about technology.
Fantastic to get these speeds on a mobile phone, isn't it?
The speeds on this thing are amazing.
Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Very nice, snappy performance. It's a good phone.
Yeah, there's a few pros and cons with this.
With Trevor Long from YourTechLife.com.
Now, my advice to people who like this kind of service is...
And Stephen Fennick from TechGuide.com.au.
I really like this new service. Gives you that flexibility to hear your music anywhere.
Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Stephen and Trevor always providing the best advice. Lots to talk about on Two Blokes Talking Tech.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Two Blokes Talking Tech, episode 368. Thank you to the good people at Netgear and Uniden. We've abandoned the EFTM studio. We've abandoned the Tech Guide Theatre and Studio. Stephen, welcome to Seoul, South Korea.
Seoul. Seoul, South Korea. Yes, we are staring out at a lovely, lovely little landscape.
Trevor, well, it's autumn yeah, looks here. Nice, so here. The trees are beginning to... lose their leaves and change colours. It is pretty beautiful, I'll be
honest.
It's
a nice day today. It was a little bit cold. They did say it was going to be cold enough for a jacket, but the two blokes endured without a jacket.
We travelled as guests of Samsung, and we'll talk about them in a second. But, pre-briefing, there was an email or a text or something sent just before we left. Saying, listen, just so you know, it's cold. It's cold over there. Wow. And so they've gone, it's like 10 degrees max. So I've packed my Barcelona jacket,
weather.
Which is like full-on snow weather. And I've got here, and the two of us have walked out on the first day to the bus. There's like four other people here. They're all in, you know, huge George Costanza Gore-Tex jackets. And here we are in just shirts. And they've got a new jacket. And I've got,
no, mate.
We're good.
We're from Australia. We don't need
rock
a jacket.
Solid here. So it's bloody cold, but not awful.
It's not
awful.
I don't consider this. It takes a lot to get a jacket on me. And
yeah, I'm self-insulated. I'm self-insulated, yeah, so there's
too,
no real issue.
Me too.
Anyway, so we're here to bring you the latest in tech news from the week, and we'll kick it off, Stephen, with why we are here. In part, we've been the guests of Samsung for a couple of days. We've actually spent a couple of days at Samsung's headquarters, and the standout thing for me that's worth and able to be talked about right now is we heard from a neuroscientist. Yeah. A neurologist, a cognitive neurologist.
Cognitive neuroscientist.
Just unbelievable smart bloke. And he was talking to us about the benefits of what he called super resolution.
Yes.
As in anything super detailed, high definition, over and above what we're getting today, even with 4K. So obviously that's tainted or pegged around Samsung's 8K announcement that happened at IFA in
it
Berlin.
It makes it relevant, doesn't it?
And it actually had more future thought than that too, because he said things like, you know, this won't be the last. We could go to 16, 32K infinity. And it was fascinating because it's one of those moments where you go, are they just wheeling this bloke out because it justifies, you know, what they're doing with 8K? Or is there something in it? And I've got to be honest, I left thinking, wow, there's really something in this.
It changed my thoughts on how we view things. And I think the takeaway for both of us was that You just assume that it's your eye that does the viewing, but it's actually your eyes look, but it's your brain that sees.
Yes.
That's just fascinating.
I think, and it wasn't a bag fest. They weren't trying to bag other people, but the point was made that Apple has, for a long time now, played up the term the retina screen. They own that term. And the idea of a retina screen is it's so detailed, there's so much resolution there that the human eye can't discern one pixel from another. And the best way of remembering that is if you think back to a lower quality screen, you know, the edges of a letter, the edges of words were jagged.
Yeah.
And you don't get that on a retina display. So he was saying that, you know, the retina in our eyes has a certain resolution capability. And it is true that you could make it 8K, 16K, 32K, and your eyes won't see the difference in pixels. They're not going to see that there's more or less pixels on the screen. But what they can do is send that image to your brain, and as you say, your brain's doing the actual seeing, and your brain is able to discern more from the picture because of the detail. And I think depth was where he talked about that being critical. So your eye cannot really discern the difference between one picture and another, but your brain can determine that there's actually depth in this image, and that's going to add. That's why the higher resolutions will add more reality to an image.
Yeah, and he was saying that beyond that retinal capacity, so there will be that point where your eyes are thinking, well, this doesn't look any different.
Yeah, that's
to me.
As good as it gets.
He said that still the brain could still pick up that depth perception and spatial recognition, And also, too, he said that your brain, when looking at a lower resolution screen, maybe with pixelation and noise, actually has to work harder. And he said that's why you'll find that you become fatigued or tired watching poor pixelated images for a long time, because your brain's working harder. So he said that watching 8K is a lot easier on your brain. You can expend more energy actually enjoying the story and the narrative rather than trying to focus on what you're actually seeing.
And, you know, look, to be clear, this gentleman had done a lot of reading. He hasn't done physical research of his own yet. He just read every paper under the sun on these things. But so it's not like we can say to you
there's no human testing
that
at the
you'll utilize, you know, six less brain cells or, you know, X amount of energy more or less watching 4K versus 8K. Yeah. You may not notice the difference in your tired state from watching a standard definition to an 8K, but the point being that the brain is doing less work because it's not required to do as much work. Because he talked about how basically the higher the resolution, the less loss there is in the picture, and therefore the less work the brain needs to do to try and kind of patch that back together and understand what it's
to try to create. So the brain, what I took out of it too, is he was saying your brain creates the 3D map that you're looking at. So you, even when we're looking here in reality, your brain is creating the image in front of you, the range, the perspective, and all of that. And the clearer that information, the faster it can recognize it and appreciate it. And I was interested when he was saying that it adds more depth to the image. Like that was one thing I remember when 4K was introduced. That and you know, this is 3D aside, nothing to do with 3D, but you could seem to look into the image more.
Yes,
I think that's what he was getting at. So with 8K, imagine how much better that's going to be. It's kind of the you're not looking at a flat image anymore, but your brain is thinking you're looking into this world.
Yeah, I was fascinated by it. I mean, he realized early on we were not neuroscientists, and therefore
really?
He had it to pull back on the nerdism.
You reckon he knew that straight away?
Yeah, he was pretty early on. But he had a remember he started talking about the J and D this and the J and D that, and then he said we looked at him and he's like the just noticeable differences. And he said it's a well-used and for many years term, JND. And so he gave us an example. It's very hard to articulate here on a podcast, but he gave us an example of all these lines on a screen. And what he'd done is lay out a bunch of lines in PowerPoint. And they were, let's say they were all 3 pixels apart. And then he moved one of the lines in the middle just a pixel to the left. And it's your brain's ability to go, hang on, there's something different there that that I can notice that allows us to say, well, hang on a minute, those 5 lines are not spaced the same. And those are the little things that improve with high resolution so that your brain can actually get those just noticeable differences from the average
cues. It's like a cue that your brain receives. But, it was an interesting chat, and I like the fact that he was saying that I think I asked the question, so, well, surely 8K is the limit. And he was saying, well, no, well, we'll be seeing 16K and 32K, and your brain can appreciate the difference. Your eyes might not, but your brain, he said, I think what was the line he used? The limit is the reality. I think, is that what he said? So there is kind of you want to build.
I said, mate, what's the resolution out the window? He goes, infinite. That's the thing. And it's the examples that now, it's interesting. When I look at a TV for picture quality, I often go too close and try and work out how well I can see the pixels. But now, and I said this in my article, actually now I realize you've got to stand back. I'm no longer going to try and look for the pixels. I'm going to stand back and look for the depth. I'm going to stand back and look for those J and D's, because the best example is that straight line. You know, when you see a straight line in the real world, and then you tilt it by 5 degrees, it still looks like a straight line on an angle. Yeah. But on a computer screen, a television screen, when you tilt a line, you get it becomes a stepladder. It becomes a series of staggers up a line, because you know it's a series of square pixels that are drawing this thing. So the more pixels there are, the straighter that line, and the more realistic that line becomes.
And also too, he was sort of saying, remember when he gave the example of a 4K image or 1K image, remember the picture he took in Paris?
Yeah.
The one, and so on the side of this building, which was at an angle, so
had like
it
corrugated iron running
it was angled so that you could see the perspective, and you could tell it was bigger at this end and that end, so you're closer, and the depth of the image. But then the lower the resolution, the more noise appeared. Remember, so the surfaces started to get these little, what do you call them?
Moire
patterns. so that it can confuse your brain. But at higher resolution, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
So your brain has less effort to work out what it's looking at.
I think a lot of what we're saying to people might sound like, you know, yeah, it's not rocket science, mate. Obviously, it's going to look better, actually. Right? Of course, 8K is going to look better.
Yeah.
There's no doubting that. But I think what this started me on the journey of thinking is, why does it look better to us?
Yeah.
And the fact is, it's more than just the pixels. And the whole retina versus higher numbers is now a critical thing to me. Now, I don't expect Apple need to have a higher resolution iPad because the iPad is not a TV screen and you're looking at it so closely. I'm talking about television here and the idea that the retinal count in terms of the number of pixels can be exceeded and you can still get a better quality. That's what we're trying to say.
I think it's also going to answer the question for people, well, why? What could I possibly need an 8K when 4K, I've got 4K? So people are thinking, well, 4K, that's enough.
Yeah, I think
for some people, of course it'll be enough. And he also mentioned the fact that different people have the ability to see different things.
Yeah.
Like you perceive things like, my wife would sit there and say, can you see how good this image is, 4K? She goes, yeah, it's okay. And I'm thinking, I'm picking out all the detail and all the things.
It was interesting to me because I put the Foxtel 4K on the lounge room TV the other day and I was flicking, it was a soccer match? Cricket? No. I was flicking between channels, the high definition, the standard and the 4K. And Jackson was like, oh, that's good. But even Amanda said, just look at the grass. And that's often where you'll see the resolution is because the grass is something that gets merged together through pixels. I think obviously the challenge now that we've established kind of this concept, the challenge now is, you know, what will the messaging be next year around 8K, around, you know, with the content, upscaling, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of questions still to be answered by the industry. And it's obviously Samsung is the kind of leader in this space now. But I give it time.
But yeah, exactly. But I think that's the challenge that Samsung and these other brands, when they eventually bring their 8K TVs out, is people going to say, why? Mm. Why do I need that? Because, you know, I've got 4K, you know, this sort of information.
Well, we've barely got 4K. Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, well, but this sort of information, people think, well, okay, if the experience is better for you, your viewing experience is no doubt going to be better. Not only with, yes, it is with your eye, but also these things we're talking about for your brain.
Mm.
So that's in itself, I think, is a selling point. So that Samsung might say, you know, their slogan might be 8K TV, your brain will love it. Good for your brain as well as your eyes.
I can't imagine that playing well in a marketing sense.
Maybe
Steve,
not. I'm just joking.
Stick to your day job, mate.
But I know, well, I think, but studies like this, I love it when people can illustrate and explain how this works. And this is the sort of thing that, pardon the pun, is an eye opener. It's actually a brain opener. But it's fascinating to think that, and what we're getting at this whole segment is the fact that we see with our brain, not with our eye.
That's right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. It was a useful thing to learn while we're here in Seoul, and no doubt there'll be a lot of big things to come out of Samsung and all the other companies. CES this year is going to be fascinating.
Because
of the new structure of the world, not politically, but in terms of tech announcements. The fact that Samsung went early with 8K at IFA, to do such a global launch, wasn't global, but Europe and the US have got that product now in market. To do and announce a product like that in such an early part of the year, you know, September, compared to normally January, just sets the cat amongst the pigeons with what they do at CES. CES
sort of prefaced it. CES will be all 8K. I think Samsung, no doubt, they're a leader, right, number one, and they said, right, 8K, we're going to own it at IFA, and they did. And I think other companies like Hisense and LG kind of panicked and thought, oh, God, we better do something then to be in the game. So Samsung tipped their hand early. They showed what they're doing. But I think CES, it'll be 70% 8K, 30% the rest. And there's things that we can't talk about that we've seen here that we will reveal at CES. But it is commenting about the culture of the company. I think we got a bit of an insight into Samsung, this pursuit of excellence they've got in all their departments, TVs especially, very competitive market, but it's this relentless pursuit of perfection. They want to get better.
Yeah.
And they're never satisfied.
I think every company would argue they have that. I just think that from a CES perspective, I'm fascinated because you remember last year too, Samsung had a separate TV launch. Now, if they do that again next year, it means that that's happening either side of CES. They announced 8K at IFA. If they were to do another separate TV launch, that's after CES. So it just begs the question, what is CES for?
Yeah, in that sense. Samsung will still be dominant at CES. You know, their booth is massive. They're going to own CES again, but they're sharing that airtime with other companies. So CES is not just for Samsung.
Yeah.
I think the reason they have their global launch is say, right, this is our own airtime. Here's what we're doing. Here's a little bit more information about what we've already launched. Yeah. So it's obvious that's going to happen again next year.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how many models others... Because if you're... even a Hisense, but certainly an LG. If you come to CES with one 8K model, that's a failure.
Yeah.
Because Samsung have multiple in the market already. They already have three or four in Europe.
Four, I think.
Yeah.
And depending on our market, 75. Depending on what market you're in, will determine the size TV we'll be giving you. So I'm hoping that Australians, we get the big boys.
I think there's... My feeling is that the way that the retailers operate, let alone the electronics companies, is they're always trying to push you to the higher end. So I think they're quite happy to have these, you know, affordable TV products, then these premium TV products, and I think this will be ultra premium. And that's they're just looking to have
it'll
a,
be
a
good,
new price
better,
bracket.
Best, and really, really, really best. That'll be the 8K category. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. And the reason we were talking earlier about how your brain can appreciate the 8K TV is because the fact that the sort of the elephant in the room is that there's no content yet for 8K.
Yeah.
Yet.
So again, that's a question for another day is how well each of the TVs from different companies cope with input content. Again, we saw that at IFA.
Yeah.
Samsung had this great demo at IFA where you pressed a button. One was for 420, one was for 720, one was for 1080, and it would show you how it would upscale it. And it was a very good demo. Now, my problem is demos are demos. You know, we need to see it in the lounge room. And this is not pitching for a TV. This is really matters what an 8K TV is going to do to a standard definition and a high definition free-to-air signal.
Yeah. There has always been upscaling, but I think there's never been a bigger need for it now. With 8K, such a big jump.
8K and massive screens.
Yeah, and a big screen. So big screen, four times 4K. So if ever you need upscaling, it's now. We've had upscaling before, and people thought, it's okay. Yeah. There wasn't the need to go for it to be used so broadly, like the jump from HD to 4K is still four times, but the 4K to 8K jump is way bigger.
Mm.
So there's never been a time when you needed upscaling more. Mm. There is upscaling now. 4K upscaling is pretty good, actually, depending on the TVs and projectors you use. But if we need it, we definitely need it for 8K.
Alrighty-o. Well, we'll obviously be at CES to report on all those things. And in the meantime, if you want a bit of an insight into the brain and how it works, techguy.com.au and EFTM.com if you want to see our thoughts on the brain dude that we spoke to yesterday.
Brain dude, yes.
Brain man.
So, no stings. We're going to keep going through, mate.
Well, how am I going to do stings, mate? We're in Seoul.
Okay, just asking. Jeez, don't get angry at me. Trent. I just wanted to ask the question. I didn't want to get the dagger eyes if I just continued through a sting. Anyway, what are we talking about? Netgear. Netgear have just released a new Orbi product. And if you've got Orbi already, how good is it? The Tri-Mesh Wi-Fi system creates great coverage in your home. Well, there's another Orbi product, the Orbi Outdoor Satellite. So this is like an additional satellite to your existing Orbi system that goes in the backyard. This is weatherproof, this baby. So you can put it in the backyard. It'll then reach out into your yard, to your pool, to your shed, to your garage. So you're going to get full coverage. And now coming into summer, that's going to be better than ever because
you're
by the pool.
You're out the back streaming Spotify by the Barbie.
Well, you've got music to your speakers. You've got maybe streaming, maybe the cricket or something by the pool or whatever you're doing. You're also, and this is, I reckon, probably one of the more important uses, is that you're also linking your security cameras. So you might have security cameras in your yard looking back at your house.
Well, I was going to say security cameras, but also just other Internet of Things devices. So mine are Tatmo weather gauges. The wind and rain gauge are actually in the far corner of my yard.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, my yard isn't as deep as others, so it actually I think it's just
so
in
still
reception.
Gets picked up.
But it can drop
this
out.
This will consolidate it big time.
And you know, think about you know, internet controlled lighting that can now be outdoor based.
Fair yard. Yeah.
So many cool things can now happen.
Is it IP56 rated so that you can have it out? You can mount it on the side of your house.
Yes, it's got a wall mounting and a little
stand.
And
there's a light on it as well. There's like a night light, so it can give you illumination.
You know, they should have done. They should have turned into a bug zapper.
Yeah,
bug zapper and Wi-Fi
in
one.
Or a speaker too. Well, that's another product. Well, you've got an interior one, but maybe the outdoor one. Bug zapper.
the Orbi voice. Maybe they need an Orbi voice outdoor as well, so that you can have the speaker outside as well. My only challenge here is it's $549.
It's not cheap.
You've really got to want Wi-Fi in the backyard.
Yeah.
Now the other thing is this works with
a normal router.
With a normal router.
Yeah.
So
you have it like an extender. Yeah.
Yeah, but it does the Orbi job of extending in terms of creating a single network. It's a very smart way to extend your network because a Wi-Fi extender are normally quite small and they do a little boost. This is a big mother thing. It'll extend that network big time.
Well, what I like, like when like David Henry, like he had some quotes when the device was released, and he kind of hit the nail on the head on our expectation of Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
like he said that. When you go to a faucet, you turn the faucet, water comes out. When you go to the switch, you turn it on, the light comes on.
Yep.
We expect Wi-Fi everywhere in our home. And with this, we're an outdoors society. Australians love the outdoors. We love our yards, our verandas. We love to entertain.
Backyards, so this barbies,
is, this
pools.
Is perfect. Yeah, the backyard barbecue by the pool. It's a perfect time of year to release this. And I think if you've already got an existing Orbi system, this is really easy to add on. It's like a one button, one push of one button, and you add it to your system. It still keeps your one network name and all that.
Yeah.
But the fact that if you don't have an Orbi and you want to extend to the yard, this will still work with your existing router. But Netgear, once again, pretty good at helping us make our Wi-Fi networks even better.
Time to stay connected in the outdoors if you've got the backyard. Because, mate, whenever I'm on the barbie, I've got music streaming. It's just what I do when I'm
Let
in the
me
back.
Guess, Farnham.
Oh, I've got a nice little playlist that's 90% Farnham, but...
who else do you listen to? Who else on your playlist? Farnham and who else?
Farnham. Pretty vast music taste. It's just not... If it's doof, doof, it's not there.
What's the most surprising music that people that you would like? Mainly, we'd be surprised to hear that you like.
Because I do get into modern stuff. If my kids like it, I'll get into it. So,
you want to be the cool dad.
Shotgun. Yeah. My kids love it.
So you want to be the cool dad.
I'll have that all the time, yeah.
Fair enough.
What do you mean I want to be the cool dad?
Exactly,
I am.
Exactly that.
I am the cool dad.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Two Blokes Talking Tech is proudly supported by Uniden. They've got a great, cool range of products, including the Guardian AppCam X Lite. Now, this combines the best of both worlds here. You've got a sensor light and a security camera. The X Lite has built-in ThermoSense, which is Uniden's proprietary technology that can detect both heat and movement, so you're not getting those false notifications. It can film through full HD, so you can view it live or through the app. You can check out your recordings as well, either from the SD card or from a cloud backup. But being a light and a camera in one, it really does help you keep an eye on your home, your holiday house, your business. And that light also adds to the image quality that you're seeing. So if it detects movement, it turns on the light and then starts filming, you're going to get some good video there. It's also weatherproof, of course, because it could be put outside anywhere you want. Two-way talk as well. So if someone's in front of the camera, you can actually have a two-way conversation. The two-way audio is really handy. The Uniden AppCam X Lite is available now, and you can check it out at uniden.com.au.
Stephen, did you ever think that when we started the show many, 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 many moons ago, that we would be talking about fitness trackers for cows?
Why not?
I mean, really gets them moving.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's a bit of a dad joke.
I think full credit to Rob on Twitter for that one, because that's exactly the reply he made to my article. This is innovation from the CSIRO, and it's not a G-up, but it's not actually a Fitbit. It's really just a tracker. Now, you know, cattle get tagged. They put a tag on their ear so they know, you know, what herd they're from or whatever. I don't know. Yep. What property they're from. They've created a tag that we don't have the specs for, but I'm tipping it has solar built in, because it looks like it's a little solar panel on the front. It's quite a large thing, probably about 6 centimeters in length and about 2 centimeters wide, tagged on the ear. But it has solar because it needs battery because it's got GPS.
Yep.
It's connected to the mobile network, obviously, because it's constantly pinging its location. It probably uses like a narrowband IoT. Yeah, right.
Okay.
And it allows a farmer to know exactly where every head of cattle is. Now, farmers in Australia, certainly in other countries, but in Australia, it's a big expense to go looking for your cattle. You're either out on the quads, or you're out on the bike, or you're out in a buggy, or you've got a helicopter, and you're flying around to actually spot and just check on your cattle. So this allows a farmer at a glance, essentially, to just see where they are.
So now, you can look it on the monitor and you can see where they all are.
You can see that one's wandered off or been stolen.
Okay.
You can see that one is, it could have died. It could just be sitting still. And look, it's not monitoring vital signs or anything, but obviously if it hasn't been active.
Movement. So
if it hasn't been active for 5 hours and it's stuck in the same spot, then the rest of the cattle that's moved on, it might be sick.
Yeah, right.
And just imagine the information that farmers do not have today that they will learn over the course of a very short space of time. Because what they know today is that, oh, they love that feed over there, and then they move over there, and then I move my... Like, they know the basics. But now they'll know which individual head of cattle are more active than the other, and that might allow them to separate the more active ones from the less active to get the other ones active. Because, you know, the activity of a cow determines the marbling of the meat and stuff like that. So there's huge benefits in, you know...
Wow. This bloke needs to just tenderise a bit more. Needs to move around a bit more.
That's my point.
Right.
Genuinely.
So a farmer say, "Look, this cow's a bit lazy. He's going to be a bit tough.
He's going to be
this bloke's really good. He's been moving around. He's going to be very tender.
He's going to have two paddocks, dog food, and what's a big restaurant? You know?
And for you vegetarians listening, well, this has got nothing to do with you.
Yeah. But look, it's a fascinating technology. Now it's certainly not the first time
used on pets. There's a lot of pet wearables too like that.
It's not the first time I've seen a cattle tracking device. I'm pretty sure Telstra's part-funded one like a long time ago.
Like Australia, and it's a no-brainer we have one of those.
But the idea that CSIRO have taken it to like the next level with a fully enclosed unit, there's no battery issues, stuff like that. It's just a trial they've done in near Townsville at a property they run up there. But I love it. I love the idea that we could create something that... Obviously, the big modelling now is not just what do we learn about the cows and how can it benefit farming, but how do you benefit farmers financially? Because each of these tags, like, they're obviously reusable. Once you refresh your herd, if it reduces costs of things like petrol, transport, like just the quad bikes, helicopters, whatever it is, if it's reducing costs, then it's a benefit to the farmer. So there's really interesting modelling and stuff to be done.
I know a lot of farmers use drones as well on their properties. So this could make it easier. They use drones to track the cattle, but now with this makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
To that.
It also is a pointer to the future, and we'll talk about 5G in a bit. But the idea of 5G, as I understand it, is not only that it's faster, but there is also a wider range. So a narrow band kind of 5G Internet of Things network should give them the range to. Because the problem with a farmer is, mate, it's all well and good to have a 4G connected cow, but if he's in the paddock, there ain't no mobile service out there, right? So that's the big challenge next, is what does a farmer need to have in terms of infrastructure in their area or on their property?
Yeah.
Like, it could well be that Telstra and other networks could install networks at a property that cover the property with a narrow band mobile signal
that can
be utilized.
Because I think was it a couple of years ago at Mobile World Congress, Telstra did a narrow band IoT like test case with a vineyard, remember, in Tasmania, so they can remotely check the soil, the moisture, and all this from anywhere.
Yeah.
So that'd be something they could apply to the farmers with their GPS fitted cows.
It's good stuff. Cows. It's a nice little development from the CSIRO, and good to see Aussie innovation continue, Stephen.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk now about Huawei. Huawei. Last week I was in Hawaii. This week we're talking Huawei.
Imagine if Huawei was from Hawaii.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't work.
I reckon they should have just to really confuse everyone, they should have their next global launch in Hawaii. Yeah, I reckon.
It's
global
funny,
launch, Hawaii.
Given the drama around pronouncing their name, I don't think they want to make it worse.
But you know, it's funny. Like when I was in London for the launch, and the Huawei staff were there, they kind of rolled the H at the start. They were there. They went Huawei. They were saying,
yeah.
Well, we say with a W, Huawei.
Yeah.
They still rolled the H into the W.
Yeah, I think that is the correct pronunciation is Huawei.
Huawei. But, so there's a H into the W.
But what? Anglicised, they just don't want people saying Huawei.
Yeah.
Because it's just complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. So, are they still sponsoring the Canberra Raiders? I think they're still major sponsor, pretty sure.
They've got a lot of investment.
Huawei, we obviously know them as a smartphone manufacturer and a bloody good one at that. The Mate 20 Pro, excellent device. Mm. Well, now they've ventured into the laptop range, into the laptop territory with the MateBook. Now, is that an X or a 10? What do I say?
MateBook
I'd call
X.
It X.
I think it's an X Pro,
MateBook
yeah.
X Pro. I think if it's an iPhone, we say it's a 10, but MateBook, we're saying it's an X.
Mm.
We'll have to clarify that. But MateBook, we're going to say MateBook X Pro. Mm. And I've got to say, for a first attempt at a laptop, it is really impressive feature-wise. And I think the standout feature, and you've got one here already, the standout feature to me is that 13.9-inch virtually borderless touchscreen display, which is rare on a laptop. A laptop normally has a larger bezel around the edge, but also at the top, they all make room for a camera. Well, here, no camera at the top. The camera's actually in the keyboard, and we know that you love that feature,
too. Oh, look, so there's a couple of things. The screen blows my mind. Now, the closest laptop I've seen to this is the Dell XPS 13, which has, you know, like a 2.5-millimeter bezel around the edge. I am trying to remember, but I think this product was announced at Mobile World Congress because I went to a briefing where they showed us all this cool pop-up camera stuff, and it never came to Australia. I think this is really just more about the fact that it's coming to Australia, which is great. But the screen is, because it's a 13.9-inch screen,
3K screen,
and when you compare it to the MacBook Air, is a 13-inch, right?
Yep.
So size-wise, it's the same size as a MacBook Air with a bigger screen.
Uh-huh.
Like the physical device is the same size, but it's got a bigger screen in it.
Yep.
Because the MacBook Air, while it has a smaller bezel, way bigger than this bloody thing. Now, the camera being in the keyboard, so if you imagine your function keys, let's say F5 or F6, you tap it, there's this F6, and between F6 and F7 is a key, and it pops up. Look, you would never use it. Because it's a camera angle of your chest.
Takes up your nose.
Yeah. No, you'd have to put the laptop up high on a ledge to be able to use it as a decent Skype call. But
has it got like a wide angle sort of to create that effect?
Still, mate, no one wants a photo from under their chin, right? Yeah. I would argue the percentage of people that actually use a camera on a laptop, very low.
Because
when was the last time you used a camera on your laptop?
Yesterday.
Oh, okay, smart.
When I FaceTime my wife, I FaceTimed off my MacBook. But I think having it under the key, because how many times have you seen people that are paranoid, they put the little...
Well, they share the Mark Zuckerberg photo where he taped up his camera and his microphone.
And how many other manufacturers have now a feature where you can actually block the camera? There's a switch where it just puts a little cover over the camera.
Yeah.
Well, this kind of deals with that as well. So when it's not in use, it's down. You can't see you.
Yeah, you can't be victim to the chicken and corn scan.
Exactly, you know? But also too, like if someone, the old, and this has happened, hackers can take control of your camera without you knowing it.
Yeah.
So your camera might be operating. The
so
light
good on them.
Be
all,
on.
All they can see is that I'm tapping away at the keyboard.
Yeah, me too.
I wonder if they can see underneath the keyboard.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Well, how they can't make it activate to pop up, can they? So if it does it by itself, you think, whoa.
Yeah, you would see it for a start, but it can't be activated other than pushing the button. You actually push the key just like you would a normal key. And it
absolutely.
Pops up.
Now, this is also, not only is it, the design-wise looks impressive, and let's face it, it does look a lot like the MacBook Air.
Yeah.
That wedge shape
is
similar.
Argue it looks like most ultra-thin laptops.
Yeah, but it just has that wedge shape as well. But
two USB-C, one USB-A though, so that's a win.
Great connectivity, and the power on this thing, the processing power is pretty cool. Long battery life.
Yeah.
They're saying it's 14-hour battery life.
Yeah.
Has that been
absolutely
your experience?
Yeah, no, it's been excellent.
So really impressive, and the fact that it can power up really quick. Have you tried this? 7.8 seconds from when you hit the power button, and there's a fingerprint reader in the button.
Did it just now. I put it on the phone.
Yeah, that was pretty quick. Was it asleep or
no, it booted up with a Huawei logo and everything.
Yeah, 7.8 seconds, and in sleep mode, it can be up and running in 6.6 seconds.
Right.
So that's pretty quick. And price-wise?
Starts at $18.99, so $50
and that's,
more.
That's 8 gig RAM i5, but if you want to go big, you want to go 16 gig RAM i7, you're $25.99.
Yeah.
Space gray and Mystic Silver.
Mystic Silver is obviously the one I've got. I think it's right up there. The Dell XPS 13 is my favorite laptop. I think it's just beautiful. The form factor, the thinness of it, the screen, everything's great.
I've just received the HP Spectre Portfolio, which is really nice.
Just Folio, mate. Just Folio.
Is it what I
just
call it?
Folio.
Isn't it the Spectre Folio? Yeah,
not portfolio.
Oh, did I say portfolio? Yeah.
Mate, that's just a next level.
You know
device.
What I mean? It's like a leather, looks like a leather notebook.
It's just not even comparable to these.
Yeah, it is really cool.
It's next level beautiful. The way the architecture of that thing.
There's a lot of great choices for laptops out there now, isn't there?
But bloody hell, they're expensive. Like, well, it's hard to find
the spec. You're talking about the Spectres.
Well,
HP.
All of them. Yeah. Like,
would you consider that expensive? $1,899?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking for a laptop. Most of the people that ask me for a laptop recommendation are not spending $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, I actually think, untapped market. If I was advising Huawei, I would say, listen, whatever you can do to get this
knock it
form
500
factor
off it,
or very close to it to the 999 mark. Okay, so it's an i3 or it's an AMD or something, right? But this form factor, this nicer screen, this nicer keyboard, just pare back whatever you have to and let me see what it looks like. Because, okay, so let's say the screen's not as bright. Let's say the quality of the material's not the same. But if you could get something to $999, that's half the price. So I grant you that. But it's a big market, I think.
This is called the MateBook X Pro. So is there a MateBook X?
I believe there is. I don't know the difference.
But not available in Australia. So only the Pro is available in Australia?
Yes.
So, well, maybe that's the sort of part two of the rollout is they may bring that cheaper one in.
I think this is dipping the toe in the water. This thing's being sold at the Microsoft store in Sydney and Microsoft online.
And you get $300 offer too before November 26th if you.
Oh, okay.
So there's an introductory offer, so Black Friday offer. So if you're listening to this, what's today? The 22nd. So you've got another four days. You can get it $300 off it. Black Friday special.
It's a dipping the toe in the water for Huawei. I'm not sure it'll be a monumental success because it's so new and so fresh, and laptops are like an annual cycle thing.
What I like about it, I think, you know, when you walk in a store and they're all lined up next to each other, this will stand out. People look at that screen.
That's
and go,
great.
Whoa,
spot on.
What's that?
Spot on.
So that'll really make it stand out.
Again, the challenge there is getting it into a store.
They
need it in Harvey's.
Yeah, exactly. So it's only Microsoft and online.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, well, it's. But. We've got to remember, we're at the early stage here. Remember 4 years ago, Huawei weren't selling phones in telcos, right? But now they're with Vodafone and Optus, they've got the Mate 20 in there. So it's the same journey. They need to be in for the long game, and they need to commit to that journey. So they need to woo Harvey Norman all the ways that you do.
Well, I reckon their strategy could also be, you know, they're a smartphone company, right? So their strategy could be put a 4G chipset in that thing, sell it through telcos.
Yeah.
The next version, go 4G version of it.
But again, the majority of laptops are being sold through JB Hi-Fi and Harvey Norman.
Yeah.
So my argument is find a price point. So have this as a premium, have a mid-range or low range, and just get into those stores. Sell
their
in
phones
numbers.
Are available those stores, aren't they?
Correct.
The phones are there.
So they've got the intro.
Yep.
I think it can be successful.
Absolutely.
Anyway, the MateBook X Pro pricing details at techguy.com.au and EFTM.com. We do it all thanks to the good people at Netgear. And as we mentioned earlier, the Orbi Outdoor is now available. The Orbi Voice is coming. Orbi is the system you need for your home if you're connected. Now, if you're not connected, I don't know why you're listening to this show. but everyone's connected these days. And as we mentioned earlier, we expect it to work. We expect when you turn on your device, or when you walk in the door, that everything will work as normal and be connected. So that's why you need a strong and solid Wi-Fi network. The tri-band mesh network that Orbi creates across your home covers your entire home, not just with Wi-Fi, but with fast Wi-Fi. So the speed that's coming into your home through the modem is replicated and sent out to the entire home. You don't need to replace your existing modem. You just plug the Orbi into your existing modem, and you got yourself one cracking network right across the house. Look them up at netgear.com.au. Now, Stephen, back in March, in Chicago, Apple launched the new iPad. I don't know what it's called. Just the iPad.
The
9.7-inch.
Yeah, iPad.
So the 2018, it's probably commonly found online as iPad in brackets 2018, so that people know that it's, you know, the 2018 model.
Yep.
So 9.7-inch screen, nothing majorly different about it form factor-wise, but it had Apple Pencil compatibility.
Yep.
This was the one they held the launch at a school, because it was all education-based, classroom content, all these
back
different
things.
Back to
school we went, remember that?
Yeah.
It was a good day.
And the thing was that this was an iPad, entry-level iPad, $469, that had Apple Pencil support.
Which is $149.
$149. The new one's $199.
Yeah.
But they also showed a product there which has just become available in Australia called the Logitech Crayon. Now, this is retailing in Australia at $109.95, and it's made for schools because there's an end cap to it to protect the pen nib. It's bigger, so it's hard to lose because it doesn't roll off the desk. It's made
kid
to
friendly.
Be easy and kid-friendly and school classroom-friendly. Now, it's available now. Here's a couple of really interesting things about this. Firstly, $109 is a lot of money.
Yep.
And, you know, schools struggle to pay for iPads, let alone get accessories for them. So I don't want to be a narky, but private schools might be okay. But the average public school is struggling to buy a classroom full of iPads. So they're going to struggle to buy a classroom full of crayons as well.
Awesome. Yeah.
But it's only compatible with the 9.7.
With the iPad.
It's not compatible with the iPad Pro.
So it will not work with the new iPad. What about last year's iPad
Pro? I don't know. But I wrote...
How do they do
that? In my story, because the press release we got said, you know, works with the new iPad 9.7. And I went, you know what they've done? They've taken the March press release in the US.
Yeah,
and
I
they've just
the
used it here, right? So I actually wrote that. I said they've obviously just, you know, carried that over. But obviously there's the iPad Pro, da-da-da-da-da. And they emailed me and said, listen, just correction, it only works on the 9.7.
Uh-oh.
And I went, I made an assumption. I really did.
Assumption? You know, how much when you assume?
No, you make an ass of you and me.
There you have it.
I find that fascinating because, A, as you say, how do you stop
How do you stop it riding on an iPad Pro?
Now, on an iPad Pro, does it work as just a really thin stylus, you know, like you know, your finger does? Or does it have any of the features of the Apple Pencil but limited? Because remember, this doesn't have all the features of the Apple
Pencil. Do you have this?
No. It'll be
we should get it and
We have to.
It's test it out.
So you've got to remember the Apple Pencil has let's call it three key features. You know, obviously the nib is narrow and you can tilt the pencil and get the slant on the like your HB pencil.
Yep.
You can also push on the pencil and get a depth.
Yep.
So it has a
4096 levels of pressure.
So so you can get different like pressures of
different
pen or ink whatever you want.
Ink
so impression. The crayon, the Logitech crayon, does not have the pressure sensitivity. It only has, but it does have the angle. It
does have the shading capability.
Has the shading capability, but not the pressure.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why it's cheaper, I guess. But how they restrict it to the iPad only, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a mystery. And I don't want the new Apple Pencil has that double tap feature too, hey?
Yeah.
And that's $199 now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's not included with the iPad Pro, which is also premium price to begin with.
Oh, man, they're taking the piss there.
Yeah, that's solid. Extreme. Solid investment. But so the Logitech has... And how do you charge the Logitech, the crayon? How does that charge? Is it
I'm
lightning?
Trying to remember back to March, but I think it might be lightning.
Lightning,
as well.
So because remember the old Apple Pencil used to stick out the bottom of your iPad, you'd just kill someone with that.
Yeah, but I mean, you only whack it in there for 5 minutes and it's charged anyway.
Yeah, it's so, better now, eh? You just put it on the magnetic
but
side
that's,
of the iPad.
That's not for everyone, right? Because it's you know it's not the existing iPad 9.7.
Yeah,
interesting product. I can't quantify how many will sell because it feels a bit niche to me. And I think there's probably more, I don't know, there must be more private schools and funding in America for this kind of thing because I don't see many Australian schools.
Why didn't they make it $99.95? It's $109.95. Don't you reckon psychologically a customer thought, it's under $100?
Exactly.
Why didn't they just do that? And make it more affordable for school kids.
Someone wanted an extra $10. I've got no doubt that through an education buy, you can probably get, you know, 50 of them for $79 or something.
Yeah.
But... My point is for the average PNC is going. We should get these things, and they're going. Well, so what? We need $1,000. We've got to run a chocolate raffle.
No, I'll tell you what they'll do. They'll say, you know what? You know those things that we already have.
Fingers.
It's called an actual pencil. things we already have, a piece of paper. Then why don't we do that?
Mate, you sound like an old man.
Well, if let's call $110 is a lot of money to pay for a product you can buy for a dollar in a shop to replicate it on a screen.
Yeah.
I know there's all these benefits, but...
No, you're right.
How are you going to get people to switch when it's such a leap?
Correct. So the point of an iPad in an education sense is, you know, whether you're doing coding or other things. If creativity, you know, art and drawing and those kind of things via the iPad is so important, it must become cheaper.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Well... What other motivation could you have? Why? I know it's really cool drawing on an iPad. You can store it. You can save it. You can make it colourful.
I'm going to say I can think of two of Jackson's closest mates who are legendary drawers, like really, really great drawers.
And for them, it'd be an investment.
So,
for sure.
So for them, I can see an iPad and the crayon, let alone the pencil, being an amazing investment because as much as sketching and pencils are great, those beautiful, like you look at artists like Warren Boo Bailey and stuff these days, the way they do their drawings now, they're
unreal.
Just so much better because they're using computers and they're, you know, fill color and stuff like that. It's just beautiful.
And have been for a while.
Correct.
Using other tools, like
so,
tablets and stuff.
So I think that's that pushing kids that way is a great thing.
Maybe.
But you're absolutely right. For the average user...
Mate, all I'd use the pencil would be... I can't draw, and I maybe doodle a little bit, but I'd only use it to write things down.
What's your go-to doodle when you're in a meeting and you're bored? And you're...
It'd have to be the hashtag, sort of hashtag and...
So I do at symbols.
Lines. Yeah, right. I do lines. That says a lot about your personality, I did a lot of the straight lines, and you do what's at symbols, so circular, right?
Yeah, I love the idea of the A being perfect and the circle going around it, like on a keyboard, because we never write it like that. When you write your email address, it never looks like an app.
Do you practice your signature?
Oh, now and then.
Isn't that funny? What is your doodle? Let us know on hashtag Ziggy Zaggy. Yeah,
take
what's
a
your go-to doodle?
Take a photo of your go-to doodle. Do not take a photo.
Yes. Let's clarify.
Let's clarify.
We don't want a photo of your doodle. Well, we want
a photo of your doodle, but it's a doodle you did with your
what
pen.
What you wrote down. A correct. Doodle with your pen.
Yeah.
Correct. Jeez, that's dangerous.
Show us your doodle.
Dangerous territory. Wow. Well, how do we get to doodle? Oh, right. We're talking about the crayon.
You know, a funny story. No, I think I can't share it because it might still be happening about a hashtag. Anyway, so we move on.
Yes.
Remind me to tell you after the show, Steve.
Okay, please. I'm dying to find out.
Can you tell?
Okay, yes. Now, I know you don't drink hot liquids of any kind, so this story is probably not... You're going to probably just zone out for the next 5 minutes.
I consider it done.
But me though, I love a cup of tea. I love a coffee. And the problem with that is that you make your cup of tea. Say you're at home, you make a cup of tea. And I normally make a cup of tea at night and I'm working and whatever, I watch TV or whatever. And you sit the mug down and after a couple of minutes, the temperature of that tea is going to really drop pretty quickly.
Of course.
And it goes cold quick. Let's face it, it goes cold fast. And same thing with coffee. Even say if you've got a takeaway cup or whatever, it's going to drop. The temperature is going to drop. But there's a new device that can help you keep your tea or coffee at the same temperature.
Is it a keep cup?
It's a mug. From the first sip to the last drop. Now, it's called the Ember Ceramic Mug. And it has a little bit of technology built in. It's got like a little heating element inside to maintain it.
So it's not just the material it's made of.
Yeah, so it's the material it's made of, and it's got some little circuitry inside. It looks like a regular mug. It doesn't look any different to a normal mug. But it does have this little element inside. It also comes with a coaster as well, so you can charge it as well. Its own matching charger, coaster charger. But the point is, there's also an app as well, so you can set the temperature between 50 and 62.5 degrees. So if you like it really hot, you're sort of obviously towards the 60 mark.
Mm-hmm.
If you like it sort of less, a bit cooler than that. And you can use the app as well as not only setting that temperature, but also tracking your caffeine intake. And you get notifications when it's reached the right temperature for you. So if you're a fan of your hot beverages... This is a really cool
product.
How
much is a mug like this?
It's $130. Now,
how much is a keep cup?
A keep cup is about, I think, $20-25.
Okay.
Keep cup is handy, but it's not going to keep your coffee warm. But this is designed to be used in an office or at home. This isn't a keep cup. You don't take this to a cafe. Oh, you could, I suppose, but you'd need to have enough charge in it for it to maintain the temperature. But it's a keep cup is typically like a takeaway cup. There's no handle and there's a lid on top. This doesn't have a lid. It's got a handle and no lid. So it's like a regular mug. So this is more for home or office use, I'd say. It's not really a keep cup, but probably that's their next invention, the Ember keep cup.
Well, this has been a riveting 5 minutes.
There you go.
I'm glad I tuned in.
Well, for those of you who love your coffee and keeping it warm, then this will be nice. Because
check it out.
It's very rare that you... It'll be a different sensation to have finishing off your coffee and it's still at the same temperature as when you started it. That's impossible up until now.
Mind blown.
It is.
Unbelievable. Check it out, techguide.com.au. Stephen, quickly before we get to your reviews, I bagged heavily Telstra some months ago because they keep rabbiting on about 5G and how they've launched it. They've done it again, but I'm going to give them some credit this time because they've used, I think, the right language in the release. So, you know, they've built out some mobile towers using Ericsson technology on the Gold Coast to be ready for 5G. They've tested some hardware on 5G networks. But what they've announced is they've tested a device. They call it a form factor device. So it's a thing that maybe looks like an old bloody, you know, basic phone.
A brick phone.
A brick phone, yeah. And it has in it a Qualcomm chipset, a commercial 5G chipset. So this is a chipset that Qualcomm is looking to actually put into phones now.
Yeah. So the next wave of 5G phones will have this chipset in it.
Most possibly, yes.
Yeah.
And they've made a voice call. Now, it's actually a voice data call, so I'm assuming with 5G we're always using data. I think it's always like VoLTE. So it's always data because they talked about this being
voice over LTE,
a voice call via the data network. Okay. But it's been done. They made a call using a Qualcomm commercially viable chipset on their public network. That's groundbreaking. Australia's first 5G call.
Absolutely, up on the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
So that's where I think they set it up before the Commonwealth Games.
When they were trying to ambush Optus.
Yeah, well, Optus are kind of, they shouldered their way past as well, didn't they?
Yeah. Optus were the sponsor of the Comm Games.
Yeah.
So Telstra went, yeah, maybe we'll set up everything on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, let's do that. But it's exciting to hear this because, look, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but it is the first step to the launch of 5G handsets, which probably, what, you reckon, 12 months, 18 months
every
away?
Time I write a 5G article, I make the point that we won't see Apple and Samsung announce a 5G handset in 2019. No. Samsung, maybe at the end of the year, they'll do something just to beat Apple. But you might get Oppo, some third-tier companies talking 5G in 2019. You'll certainly see a 5G handset at Mobile World Congress, but it won't be one of the big guys, I don't think.
So what? Like, I think we've got to sort of try to speculate here. The reason it won't be is because the form factor is just not there. Was the chipset bigger?
I understand the battery's an issue still.
Right. Okay.
They're trying
to keep it cool.
Trying to keep the battery life or the battery drain from a 5G connected device down.
Wow.
So that's an issue. But also, there's no networks. So it's cart before the horse.
Although Telstra says though that they're up until they've started a 3-year campaign.
Totally.
That'll end on June next year.
Yeah, but we've literally only just had the standard confirmed. So now networks are starting to work on building their networks. Now's the time to start talking about devices. But essentially, 2020 is the year of 5G. 2019 will be the year 5G makes it real. But 2020 is the year 5G makes it big.
The rubber hits the road, we've been hearing about 5G for 3 years,
mate,
4 years.
I've only been to Mobile World Congress like 4 times, and I've heard about 5G every time.
Yeah. Exactly right. But I think too that 5G is going to be not only good for us as customers, like consumers with making calls and using data on the move, but also too it's going to have a lot of implications for businesses and industry, like companies that are using the latency of 5G. Like that's what I went to the Gold Coast for the Comm Games as a guest of Optus, and they told us all about 5G. Part of it is not just speed and capacity of the network, but it's also how fast the network is in terms of latency. They were saying that if you send a signal down a 4G network, it does take like a half a second to react, whereas a 5G, it is almost instant.
Yeah. And
so
also,
those little things.
Well, the one thing I remember, in fact, it might have been Optus too at a headquarter conversation, was it's not just about saying, great, your device can now download it at a gigabit per second. Mm. It's actually not that the desired outcome. It's the moving people off the network quicker. So if you and I are sitting there and we're downloading a big bit of content, where it's like we're part of a traffic jam on the network. So what you do is you move us off the network faster by giving us that content faster, and it frees up the network for more people. Yeah. So you essentially
build conveyor belts.
You essentially build more capacity in the network because of the speed. So Sydney to Gosford on the freeway, not only would it be a faster journey if you went faster, but more cars would take the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could handle it.
Correct.
Because that's one issue with 4G is an issue. Anyone who's ever been to a footy to a grand final, the cells are jammed, you can't do much.
That's
it's
right.
Kind of everyone's in a roadblock, in a traffic jam, sort of gridlock. But 5G, anyway, not the case. But also, too, I think it's going to be people are talking about it as an NBN competitor, too.
Yeah, totally.
Home use.
Remember, the NBN's business plan only suggests that 75% of people of households will connect to the NBN. Mm-hmm. So the other 25%, let alone the double up, there'll be people like me who have both 5G and NBN. Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
If you can afford it.
That's the thing. Like, what's it going to cost to have a 5G? Yeah. I think Optus, they're already planning on having a home router,
the first,
5G router, early next year, January.
This, to be clear, 5G will hit the road next year with primarily home-based devices.
Yeah,
and 5G, dongles. 5G mobile will rubber hit the road in 2020. That's the difference.
Yeah,
big
absolutely.
Difference. Two Blokes Talking Tech. All that information is at EFTM.com and techguide.com.au. Stephen, some lighting.
Yes, we. I had a look at this. Strip lighting is really cool. Like, you know, we've seen the Philips Hue.
Hue strips, they're great.
And the thing with the Philips Hue, though, you need a little bridge. You know how you got to have that little thing connected to your motor? With the Yee Light, now this is a Indiegogo startup. They sent me an email and sent me the product, and Australians can buy it. But it is not only way cheaper than a Philips Hue light, it doesn't need the hub either. So you can just connect it directly to your network. Comes with an app. And is really flexible in terms of the lengths you can buy. You can have add-on strips as well. So say you want a really long length, you can say buy a 2 meter strip, and you can buy an additional 1 meter strip, and simply just plug it into the end of it to make it longer.
Yeah.
And then if you've gone slightly over what you need, there are points along the strip, which is about a centimeter wide, where there are areas where you can just cut it. So you just cut it when you at the end of the, on these areas.
Oh, really?
And that's your limit. So there are spaces there where the circuitry won't. It'll just cut off right there. Really easy to put up and really easy to connect to your network as well. But what I like about it is it can also be connected to your network, and you make it a smart product as well. That's a very popular part of a smart home is lighting. And with this, it's got Alexa and Google Assistant compatibility. You can even connect it to IFTTT as well, so to create some scenarios. So examples of that would be...
You know, this has been around since 2015. I saw them, might have been CES Asia.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is the latest version called Aurora, is the latest version of this. But you can use it in some interesting ways. So if you say you've set up in your smart home and you want to connect it, you can use it as a, this is a use I'm interested in. You can have it in your bedroom.
Hello.
And you can use it as like an alarm. So the lighting.
Hey, G bro. Dim the lights.
You could do that as well, but you can have it so that it starts getting brighter, like a sunrise, and will reach peak brightness at the time that you want to wake up. So it's like having a sunrise in your bedroom.
I have to wait until I'm in and I get separate rooms for that.
Like that, is it? All righty. But yeah, you can also have it, use it like for a timer. Like imagine you're a young mum, your child's asleep, you don't want to have this loud timer going off, so you can ask the light to be your timer. So when the time runs out, it'll change colour or flash or something like that. So many applications to it, apart from it just being beautiful. Like you have it underneath a entertainment unit or underneath your breakfast bar in your kitchen. You can really, around your curtains, can really change the mood and the feel of your home. So
lovely.
It is available through that Indiegogo page, starting at $45 for a 2 metre strip, $30, this is US dollars too, for a 1 meter extension. And they also have packs, so you can get a 6 meter, 8 meter, and 20 meter packs. So they're starting at $109, available through the Indiegogo page.
Beautiful. Check out the link at techguide.com.au. Stephen, Plantronics, they make good headphones.
Yeah, Plantronics. Now, here's a bit of trivia for everybody. Next year, we're going to be celebrating 50 years since man landed on the moon. Did you know that?
Yes.
And those famous words by Neil Armstrong, "One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind," were actually spoken through a Plantronics headset.
Wonderful.
That is a pretty solid claim to fame, isn't it?
It is.
So they've been around for that long. Yeah. They know what they're doing in terms of audio headsets and audio quality. And they've got a new range of Backbeat Go and Backbeat Fit headphones and earphones. And wireless, of course, very durable for your training. But the one I'm going to focus on today is the Backbeat Go 410. Now, these are noise-canceling earphones. And so there's a band that goes around your neck, and that contains the battery and the noise-canceling circuitry, let's say. And then the lightweight earphones go in your ear. You've got your inline controller as well. So perfect if you're on a plane. And with the new iPad Pro, I use this on our way over. New iPad Pro doesn't have a headphone jack. So I wanted to listen to the iPad Pro and still have noise cancellation, and this paired beautifully got the noise cancellation. But what it can also do, if you want to listen to watch the in-flight entertainment, you can also, there's a USB cable you can connect through the micro USB port, the charging port, and then on the end of that is an audio jack, a 3.5 headphone jack, and also the plane plug, so you can then listen to the movie.
Beautiful.
Movie on the in-flight entertainment system.
Very nice.
So a really handy device,
that
one.
Did you see any on the plane that we should be watching?
No, I didn't. I just watched all my own content.
I may have neglected to download anything for the flight home tonight. Anyway.
Oh, well, you're going to be sleeping most of the way anyway.
Yeah,
mate,
I will actually. Yeah, good point.
So, how much? This $239.
Okay.
which is not too bad. Let me just confirm that.
Active noise cancelling?
They are, yeah. ANC, the whole bit. So,
how good is it?
Yeah, it's good. I'll be honest. It's not quite as... I'm used to using the QC20s.
We were talking in the office. John has been reviewing a set of over-ear Plantronics.
Yeah, sorry. They're $199.99. Under $200, they are.
He was saying it was good, but maybe not great. And I said, well, so here's the thing. It's critical when you're looking at these products that you go, well, we know that Sony has probably got the best over-ear and Bose very, very tightly behind it in terms of noise cancelling. If they're a 10 or a 9.5-10... Yeah. You just got to say, where is this? Because it's a price scale, right?
I think...
You can't expect QC20 style noise cancelling from something that's half the price.
They're $400, those speakers. These are $199, by the way. So they're under $200. And if the Bose is a 10, I reckon this would be a solid 7.5.
Yep.
So, and it said they're half the price.
Yeah, 100%.
Also in their range, and I'll be reviewing these individually, is the Backbeat Go 800, which were the over-the-ear noise cancelling headphones. Yep. Plantronics... I think that very smartly they're trying to offer value here. Because you buy a pair of Bose headphones or Sony's, what do they cost? They're like $500.
That's right.
So with the, I'm trying to find it now, the Backbeat 8 Go 800 is, and I'm trying to find the price here, $239.99. Yeah. So that's less than
the
half price.
Right?
Yeah, over ears. Look at them. They look really nice. They've got nice little copper accents.
We've got a full review at EFTM.com. Yeah. Mate, they're great.
They are good. For the price, way, way better value.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for, you don't have to break the bank to get a decent pair of noise cancelling headphones is the point here.
All right, check it out. Techguide.com.au. Stephen, we've got to fly home tonight.
We do.
Back to reality.
Back to the grind, mate.
Until then, back to the grind here. We'll get some work done here. We'll get the podcast up for you to listen to, which is what you're doing now, obviously. I didn't really need to say that.
It's like writing a letter. Okay, I've got to go now. Isn't that, you know, when back in the day, you never had a pen pal, of course. You had no friends when you were younger.
I still don't.
But even an email, when someone says, okay, I've got to go now. And when you get it, they've already gone. You know what I mean? That's kind of what you just did there. Got to upload it. It's already uploaded. They're listening to it. Are you with me, or have I lost you again?
Are you with me? I'm just tuned in.
Okay.
Out.
Yeah.
It's been great. Thanks, Korea. Thank Samsung.
Good Korea move. I wanted to put that in there. And someone else said to me, I hope you find your soulmate over there.
Well, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Did you? Because you had your wedding anniversary.
I had my wedding anniversary. Yes. Happy anniversary to Joe.
Congratulations on putting up with him for 26 years.
Yes, she deserves a medal for that.
I would think a lot more than a
Louis
medal.
Vuitton bag, perhaps. Yeah. I hope she's not listening.
Mate, get less for murder.
Yeah, 26 years married. We've been together 31 years, you know, would you believe? 31
I don't know.
Years. We met when we were 2 years old.
I don't know what you've got on her, but it's obviously...
Mate, she won Lotto when she met me, mate.
Was the jackpot?
And I say to
did
her,
the jackpot
I won,
go
I
off
won
the week before?
I won Powerball. Yeah, she won Lotto. I won Powerball.
Jackpot went off the week before, and then she got you. You win Lotto, and it's like
80 million. Yeah, I was the 3 million. Yeah, she got the 80 million.
You got the 1 million. The bloke before you got 85 billion.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week. Thanks to Netgear and Uniden. See you on the plane, Stephen.
See you then, mate.